the podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast, the podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Matt Ellenberger. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit me at burgerontherun.blogspot.com, where I rant and rave about the cold weather, college life, my favorite topic, the Boston Red Sox, but most importantly, running. So wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. You ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
All right, my friends, welcome to episode 72 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. This is Chris, and I will be your host with my friend Buddy, the Wonder Dog. Where is he? I think he's sleeping on the porch. We just did about 13 to 14 miles. It was an ugly run. I ran over this ridge, Oak Ridge, and we ran up this, like, 1,000-foot ridge, but just felt crappy. My legs feel crappy. I don't think riding and running at the same time are all that complimentary in terms of wanting to feel good about your running. Good week. What do we got for you today? John Bingham, the Penguin. We're going to interview him. It's cool. He gives a great interview. What else we got for you? Going to announce the winner of the bra thing. And it wasn't you. Well, it might have been you. It depends who's listening. But I didn't choose. My friend Gracie from Gracie's Action Wear chose. And we'll have that. And other than that, I'm going to stick in a few recordings, a few audios, and we'll have some fun. All right? So, on with the show.
Okay, hey, it's me. It's Chris. Down the pond here. Buddy the Wonder Dog. It's sunset. Here he goes. He's going for a swim. Good for you, buddy. Good for you. The sun sets around 7:30. It's about 7:35 now, so it's still pretty bright out. The glow stays on for a long time. I was talking today about fishing, you know. Great fishing this time of year in the local ponds. Great bass. So I used to bring the canoe down here with the kids. But for some reason, my life is too busy for fishing. Maybe I'll gain that back at some point. So mount the laptop in the canoe, yeah? Yeah, so I hurt my knee, I think, all this mountain biking, because the mountain biking puts a different stress on the knee. It's not like regular biking where you can get a full stroke and you're all cramped up. So I got a little pain on the outside of my right knee, and it's from overlapping the hill repeats on the stationary bike and the epic mountain biking with Anthony and the 200 squats program overlapping. So it's a little pain, so I'm going to take it easy this week, which is okay. So I went hard. I didn't go that hard. Saturday I kind of took it easy. I broke my bike, though. Oh, look at that. A little nest up there. It's an owl nest, maybe. I bent my ring on my bike. I was screaming down a hill, and there was a tree, a couple of fallen trees at the bottom, and there's no way I could shift my weight, so I just sort of held on for dear life, and I came out the other side. Just bounced right over those trees. But it bent my large rings in the process. He's out in the middle of the pond swimming. Good for him. Wow, a lot of bugs. A lot of mosquitoes with all this rain. Yeah, it's itchy. Got poison ivy on my legs, too. So, yeah, so this week I'm going down to Baltimore. I got a presentation at one of our favorite shoe companies tomorrow. And I'm going to start it off by going, well, you know, I'm Chris Russell. I'm the vice president, yada, 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 yada. And, you know, here's my team. Here's what we're going to present. I'm going to say, and I'm also, by the way, a marathoner, an ultra marathoner. Throw my medals on the table and say I'm also a customer. Throw my old shoes on the table and say, you know, why is that important? Because I understand the bond between athletes and their footwear. which is one of your corporate tenants. So we'll see how that goes. And then I'm down to Baltimore for a day or two. I'm not going to come back Wednesday night. I could come back Wednesday night, but I'm not going to. I'm going to stay there because they're supposed to get thunderstorms. And I'd rather sleep in a hotel than sleep in the airport. So I'll come back Thursday morning. It's just Baltimore. It's only an hour and a half away. Quick Southwest flight out of Manchester. I'm going to see if I can... Jeez, mosquitoes are killing me. I'm going to see if I can meet Digger, Matt, Run Digger Run, the helicopter guy for a jog while I'm down there. Come on, dog. Hey, buddy, bring it in. Come on, bring it in. Come on. Yeah, come on. Come this way. He's a triathlete now, I guess. Good for him. Come on, you can do it. He's like 100 feet out. Maybe more, maybe 150 feet out in this pond, swimming around in circles. You know, border collies aren't supposed to do that. Labradors are supposed to do that. He's a nut. All right, so I gotta go. We'll talk.
And now for the equipment check.
Jerry?
Yes.
Jerry, race speed. How are you doing?
Doing very well. How are you, Chris?
I'm fine. I'm calling you from the road here in Carlisle, Massachusetts. This is where Babe Ruth used to live when he played for the Boston team. I bet you didn't know that.
No, I didn't. I knew you came from the Massachusetts area, but I didn't know that.
So Jerry's our friend Ray Speed from Twitter, from our little Twitter community with all the little Twitter people. And Jerry owns an enterprise where he sells shoes and apparel. And I wanted to give Jerry a chance to tell us about it. So Jerry, why don't you give us the 100 words or less on what you are, what you do?
Okay, we are Telerun.com. We have been in business since 1985. We sell running shoes, running apparel, and running socks. And we can reach the area from Washington, D.C. up through a semicircle to northern Massachusetts in one day overnight shipping as normal. Most of our customers are very pleased with the response they get from us. We could do the whole East Coast within 3 days. So we've been doing very well with that. And being that we've been around for that many years, we hope to continue to be around and keep our customers happy.
Right. And one of the things I really like about having you close by on Twitter is you get to answer all those shoe questions that people have. So
I try to do that as best I can, yes.
Yeah, because people are always full of shoe questions, and it's good to have somebody who actually knows as part of the community. So what brands do you guys carry?
We are carrying Asics, Brooks, Etonic, and New Balance.
I have run in all those shoes. So if people want to get to you, what's the web address?
The web address is http://telarun.com.
All right. So thanks for giving me a couple of minutes here during my commute and letting the community know about what it is that you do. And I hope it helps you out. All right?
Thank you, Chris. Have a good evening.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And now for our featured interview.
John, you're there.
Good morning.
How are you doing? Hey, so I'm going to start
doing by... just great.
Yeah, I'm going to start by reading your official bio intro here, John Bingham the Penguin, so that for the two or three people in the running community who don't know who you are, we can bring them up to speed. All right. So through his popular monthly column in Runner's World magazine, his breakthrough first book, The Courage to Start, and his best-selling No Need for Speed, John the Penguin Bingham has inspired hundreds of thousands of men and women to run for fun, fitness, and self-affirmation. And his book, Marathoning for Mortals, co-authored by Coach Jenny Hadfield, revolutionized long-distance running and walking. And now you have a new book, which is Running for Mortals, and probably more than that in the works, right?
Yep.
And John and Jenny bring the joy of running.
Oh, there's always something going on.
Always something going on. And I'll read this next little bit, too, because this is the salient bit, which really gives you your credibility, which is, you know, once an overweight couch potato with a glut of bad habits, including smoking, drinking, and I'm sure many other things, at the age of 43, Bingham looked midlife in the face and started running. Since then, he has completed 40 marathons, hundreds of 5Ks, 10Ks, etc., and developed a whole new outlook on life. And you also do a lot of work with the National Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and the team and training folks. So, and your website is johnbingham.com. So there we go. So how are you this morning?
I'm fine. You know, everyone always likes to focus in. They seem to take some sort of pleasure in reading that glut of bad habits, you know, the overweight smoker, drinker. And, you know, I can't seem to shake that. And it's probably fine because I think people look at that and they say, well, God, he doesn't seem that smart. And if he can do it, I can do it. And that's really been sort of the hallmark of this whole penguin phenomenon, is that it's really aimed at a group of people who just simply want to take control of their lives and want to change their lives with their own two feet.
Yeah, like I said, it gives you the credibility, right? Because I can remember when I first started running marathons, I said, okay, how am I going to learn how to do this? And I picked up a book by Bill Rogers, right, which had, you know, great tip to, like, when you get on the top of Heartbreak Hill, throw in a couple of five-minute miles to dust the competition, you know. And it's like, well, that's not really applicable to me there, Bill. So yeah, it's great. It's something for the rest of us.
I think, and I've been very fortunate in that. If you go back to when the column started in 1996, up till then, almost every writer about running had been either a former Olympian or a former collegiate athlete. And you're absolutely right. I think the perspective that they had was that everyone wanted to run a sub-230 marathon. And as it turns out, it's really not true. There's a lot of people who are very content in running a sub-6-hour marathon, and they need just as much help in getting started. And the kinds of things that people like us need to know are just as important as the kind of things that someone needs to know if they're trying to, you know, work on their anaerobic threshold.
Yeah, and there's a lot of overlap, too. There's a lot that goes both ways.
It's interesting you say that, because in my job now, I'm very lucky to be around some of these top people. And if you don't talk about pace, if you just talk about a workout ethic or a training schedule, the kinds of things that I do and the kinds of things that the top athletes do are very similar. They're just at a grossly different pace.
Yep, and the same things are all applicable. You know, you talk about chafing, you talk about nutrition. You know, everybody's got the same problems or the same opportunities.
Well, I think so. And I think, frankly, we've got problems that they don't have. If you're going to be out on a marathon course, for example, for 5 or 6 hours, the way you have to contend with nutrition and calorie intake and chafing, for example, is very different than somebody who's only going to be out there for 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's more like an ultra marathon.
Well, it is. And frankly, a lot of those top people cannot imagine what it's like to run for 5 or 6 hours. They just can't even comprehend it.
Yeah, the whole equation changes once you're out on the road past, you know, 3 or 4 hours. So you're absolutely right.
Absolutely.
So, you know, you've become sort of the Pied Piper of the back of the pack folks here. What do you think's behind this current running boom? And I'm sure you see it, because I see it, which is the sort of mid to back of the pack swelling of participation.
Right. I think a couple of things. Again, you go back to 96 when the column started. They referred then to a second running boom. And anytime you say boom, implicit in that is there's going to be a bust. And I think people believed then that folks were going to come into running in the same way they came into mountain biking. Everybody was going to buy a mountain bike. Everybody was going to buy a pair of running shoes. And we'd enjoy this 2 or 3 years of growth, and then people would leave the sport. Well, I think what happened is that those people didn't go away. And about the same time, 1998, Indy Racing created the Rock and Roll Marathon in San Diego, and it was the first time that there was an event created for runners where the goal was not to finish fast. I mean, they had bands at every mile. They had cheerleaders. So I think the event industry and the sport of running began to merge, and all of a sudden there was a place for people who were going to be out there for 3, 4, 5 hours, and it just seemed to hook up, and people then became what we now refer to as lifestyle runners. Running is just a part of who they are, in the same way that everything else is a part of their life. It's not the end-all, be-all of their life the way it might have been for some folks in the 70s, but it's a great way to exercise. It's heart healthy. It's great for weight maintenance, and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I remember running, you know, back in the early days, and most of the guys and there weren't a whole lot of gals we were running with. They were all pretty fringe, you know. There was a lot of people on the edge, and now it could be anybody. And I like that fact that it's inclusive, and everybody you run into has some sort of exercise story these days.
Well, sure. Well, the quintessential image of the runner is, you know, that the loneliness of the long distance runner, and of course that may still be true for a certain category, but for the most part, it's no longer the loneliness of the long-distance runner, because people training for marathons are training in groups, in small groups, in large groups. You mentioned women. That's been a huge growth. You look at some of the bigger races now, you'll see 50 or 60% of the participants are female, and it's a much more social avenue than it is this sort of isolating sport that it used to be.
Yep. How did you get started with Runner's World? I mean, how did they, did somebody approach you, or did you send them a couple of articles? How did that happen? How did they decide all of a sudden to become that they needed an everyman?
Well, that's a story that people still don't believe, because it's just so bizarre. I had started running, and there was a group back in the mid-90s on the Internet called the Dead Runner Society. Now, the Internet then wasn't what the Internet is now. I mean, it was really mostly academics and government types. And there was this little group of runners that were just kind of sharing their experiences and their daily runs. And I somehow got hooked up with them and sent a couple of emails about events that I had done. And they were just musings of this former fat guy, smoker, drinker about what it was like to be a runner. A member of that group who had done some freelance writing for Runner's World, Marlene Simmons, sent these emails to Andy Burfoot, who at the time was the editor of Runner's World, and said, look at these. There's something in this voice that I think is interesting. And it just happened that day he paid attention of the hundreds of things like that that come across his desk every month. And there was something that tweaked his interest. He gave me a call. He asked me if I could do 8 columns for Runner's World in 1996, and I did. And then it turned out there was a readership, and I was very, very lucky to be that guy who got to speak for, as you say, the Everman. He got to speak for the rest of the runners, and that's how it started, and here we are 13, 14 years later.
Yeah, and it was great. I remember in 1996 reading those columns, and it really resonated, with anybody who's running, right? It was the core of the emotions of running, not necessarily the technique or the nuts and bolts of it. So it really resonated.
Well, you've hit it right on the head. I mean, you've captured it. It is about the emotional side of running. And in the early days, I was really writing about my own emotional journey, because we all thought, I mean, I thought, the editors of Runner's World thought, that there was something unique about my experience, and that's what was going to make it interesting. What we all discovered, though, is that it is a universal experience, the emotions about running and the moments that you get as a runner, those great mornings where you're out there and the birds are chirping, and I live near the forest now, and I'll see a deer out there feeding, and I think, oh, my God, without running, I wouldn't have this in my life.
Exactly.
And it doesn't matter if you're out there at a 6-minute pace or 16-minute pace. As runners, we share that. And I think that's what's made, given the column, the kind of longevity, is because it does talk about the universal emotional experience of running.
So now you've transitioned from the dabbler to basically doing it for a living. What's that transition like?
It was an opportunity that I had, and I'm a former musician, and I recognize that early on, that if this was going to work, I would have to invest in it. I was an academic at the time. I was a university administrator at a sort of a mid-sized university in Tennessee. And there was just something about this that was magical, and I wanted to share it. It's that sort of Johnny Appleseed. I was evangelical about the joy that I had discovered in running as a former fat guy, smoker, drinker. And I began to travel and get around the country. The first year I went out in 1997, I was on a motorcycle because it was the only thing I could afford to put gas in. I was out for 8 weeks and traveled all over the country, talking at running stores and for running clubs. And the next year I went out for 12 weeks. The year after that I went out for 26 weeks, pretty much the way a musician would hit the road and tour. And what happened is that the traction really, the whole concept, the phenomenon began to get traction, because it seemed like I was everywhere. And
I discovered
it was a lot more fun. It was a lot more fun to be the penguin than it was to be a university administrator.
That's a great, great metaphor, because you're exactly like, the kids in the old VW band going on tour.
Well, I am a 60s kid. I mean, I came of age, and that's right. If I'd have had an old Volkswagen van, I probably would have done it, with flowers in my hair.
Before we get too much further, what's one or two of your best stories from all this time you spent out rubbing elbows with the runnerati?
I think the biggest lesson for me, and we've alluded to this earlier, the biggest lesson for me is that there is a common experience to running that we all share. I had dinner with Khalid Kanucci not long after he'd set the world record a few years ago, and I was, this was at the Chicago Marathon, and he ran 2:05:47, I think, that year.
Yep.
And I was joking with him that it was a good thing that he had really pounded hard and set a world record, because I was chasing him. And he said, well, you know, what did you run? And I said I ran a 5:36. And he thought I meant 5:36 a mile. And he was astounded. He said, well, that's very good for a man your age. And I said, no, Khalid, you mope. I ran that thing in 5:36. And he said, my God, man, how can you run for that long? And that's, you know, that's it. And I asked him what the longest he had ever run, and he said 2:07, his worst marathon. I said, I don't know how you can call yourself a long-distance runner if you can't run more than 2:07. You know, there's hundreds and thousands of us that run over 2:07 all the time. So it was, you know, that was sort of the beginning of this idea that we share something really important, and that if we get past the kind of artificial boundaries that we put between each other. I mean, it's a social thing, really. I'm a 5-minute miler. I'm a 6-minute miler. I'm a 10-minute miler. None of that matters. If you're a runner, you're a runner. You put on your shoes, you go out and train, you're a runner. It's as simple as that.
Sure. And what's, you know, but there's still this sort of tension or dynamic between, you know, guys from the 70s and 80s who were, you know, in order to run then you had to actually race and try.
Right.
And so there's this almost a nobody cares how fast you are, but they want you to work at it. They want you to suffer a little
right.
bit, and they want you to be accountable and not sort of be entitled, right? Because I've read, you know, through your work, you know, you go down the track. You do the training to get those 5.5-hour marathons. So you're still making the commitment to the sport, right? So, I mean, what do you think about that?
Absolutely.
Sort of
and I
complete versus
well, I think
compete?
Everybody's got to make the commitment. No one is entitled to be able to run a marathon. You know, that's not a right. I did a program a few years ago with the Polar Heart Rate Monitor people who were great to me. And what they were doing, that they had me wired up on a marathon, and every 10K they were pulling off the transmitter and they were uploading the data, and it was just going to be fun for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
On Monday morning I called them and I said, hey, how did it go? And the engineer said, oh, it was an abject failure because your heart rate was up at about 85% of your max for over 4 hours.
Yeah.
I said, well, yeah, that's about right. I would have started probably in that sort of 65-70% of max and would have gotten some cardiac creep, and then I would have gotten up to a comfortable rate for me. And he said, are you kidding me? He said, do you know how fit you'd have to be able to run at 85% of your max for 4 hours? And I told him the same thing I'm telling you. I am fit. I'm just slow. And I think that's the message that people have got to learn. You know, I've never told anyone to go slower than they can. And if you can run a 6-minute pace and you're comfortable and it's joyous for you, well, God bless you. Go out there and do that. But if you need to train hard, if you need to be serious, if you need to be watching your nutrition and paying attention to your life, and the best, fastest time you can run is at 11:30, well, then that's fine for you. And you should have that ability to go out there, train seriously, and share the moment of victory at an 11:30 pace that somebody else might get at a 5:30 pace.
The point being that you can't really expect to not train and go do this, right? It's not something where
I don't think you can at a 6-minute pace or at a 16-minute pace. People get in trouble, you know, if they go out, well, I'm young, I'm healthy, I'm going to go out and run a marathon because my buddies did and I got drunk and promised them I would. Well, those people get in just as much trouble and more trouble, frankly, than the slower people who do, in fact, train.
So what's the what's your marathon for mortals? You know, I know a lot of people who actually follow that program and are very happy with it. What's the underlying theory there?
Again, you know, Coach Jenny Hanfield, who's also my wife, it wasn't at the time we wrote the book, put together a training schedule and information for people who are either getting started in this or who just want to show some improvement. It was the first time that anybody integrated a walk program, which then could morph into a walk-run program, then into a run-walk program, or a full-run program. So it allowed people to move through a training program over a couple of years. And then it's also got the sort of goofball penguin humor in it that I've got, which is really aimed at helping people not take themselves quite so seriously. I mean,
right.
It should be fun. This is not brain surgery. This is not something that should be onerous. When I see people out there and they look grumpy, I think, well, why would you do that? You paid money for this. So that's the sort of spirit of the book is exactly what we're talking about. Take it seriously. Do the training. Do the things that you need to do to be successful. but then at the same time, keep the perspective that you need to have, which is that it should be fun.
Right. Take a long-term view of the whole thing.
Really.
So you and I are getting older. You know, how are we going to keep running for the next 20 years, you know? What changes for us? This is something I'm starting to get interested in, you know?
Well, I just turned 60 in December, and I recognize that I can't, even for a guy like me who's been running now for 17 or 18 years, you know, I can't do the things that I did when I was 45. I can't even do the things that I could do when I was 50. And I focus more on the quality of what I'm doing. I'm doing a lot more cross-training. I mean, I'm doing some cycling now on a regular basis as an adjunct to the running. And frankly, I'm just looking for different kinds of things to keep running interesting for me. You know, mentioned these what I call the nylon shorts guys from the 70s who were out there pounding around. And you know, if you weren't running at a six-minute pace, you weren't really a runner, and anything over a seven-minute pace is jogging. Well, those guys are now in their 60s, too, and they're discovering that, you know what, it's not so bad running along at an 8:30 pace. And,
yeah.
You know, this is kind of fun, and there's some interesting people.
If they can still run, right?
That's a very good point. Yeah, I used to be a runner when I was, you know, I used to do all that. But what happened? Well, I got hurt. I overtrained. Well, okay. So how smart were you really?
Yeah.
And my goal is to be running right up until the time they put me in the box and people walk by and said, geez, he looks good. I can't believe he's dead. And so I'm doing a lot more walking and cross-training, walking as a cross-training activity, but intentional walking, not the sort of mall walking, but viewing walking as a part of an overall lifetime activity has been a big benefit to me.
Good. There's hope then.
There's great hope. And you see people starting at all ages. You know, there's that guy he's Indian. I can't think of his name off
the top. He set the record in Toronto. I know the guy you're talking
Saja,
about. Yeah.
Yeah, Saja Singh.
Something Singh,
that's right. And he ran a marathon at 91, so he set the world record for over 90 marathon. And he's now cut back. He's only doing half marathons because no one has ever run a marathon at 100 years old. Now, would you like to have that for a goal at 91?
You're not going to
back off to half marathons?
Right. He started running when he was 90. And one of the interesting things that I find is a lot of folks enter the sport when they're in their 40s-ish, right, late 30s, 40s,
right,
as sort of a midlife crisis. And they start winning all the age group records because they don't have the miles on them that the rest of us have.
That's exactly right. Exactly. That's what I tell people. You got fresh legs.
So
and you know, at any age you start, you can expect to improve for 7 or 8 years. And so it doesn't really matter when you get started.
Right, exactly. So what do you got coming up? I heard you were down in Nashville last week. So what do you got coming up?
I was down there for country music this weekend. But tomorrow morning I'm ready to leave to go to the Rock and Roll Marathon in San Diego.
Yep.
Do that, and then from there, you know, the Elite Racing crowd has just created races all over the country. I'll be in Seattle in later in June, and back here in Chicago in August for the Rock and Roll Chicago event, and then Virginia Beach, and then off it goes.
Well, good for you. Anything you want to point people to?
Well, that's very good. I mean, any more interest, you can go to johnbingham.com. Of course, I'm up there on Facebook because I'm trying to learn how to be the Penguin 2.0, whatever that's going to mean. And, the joy for me is meeting people who are trying to change their lives. And anything I can do to help, I'm more than happy to do that. They can email me at john@johnbingham.com. I read all my own email. I don't know who they think I've got for a staff. If people say, you know, can you get this to John? So be in touch. Get out there, enjoy running, and be the best model you can for the joy of running.
All right. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to chat with me this morning. I appreciate it. I'm a big fan. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your interest.
We'll talk to you soon, all right?
Take care, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Here's today's quick tips.
So I hear a lot of people talking about dogs on their shows. And, you know, I run with a dog, and I trained Buddy early on to run on leash, so he runs on leash pretty well. He pulls until he gets tired, but I mean, I really didn't put a whole lot of work into heel training him. But off-leash, he runs great, stays right with me. He's a very, very athletic dog, and he really enjoys himself. He enjoys this stuff. So, but I mean, if you're running and you see a strange dog, you know, I carry a water bottle. And if you point your water bottle at the dog like a gun and squirt him in the face with it, he will go away. Guaranteed. This works. The other thing you do is you just stand up tall, you point your finger at the dog, and you say no in a dark, deep, deep voice, and that'll stop them in its tracks. Because dogs, when they're attacking you, they think you're some sort of monster or animal, but as soon as you start using words like that, and if you can get the dog's name, too, that works, too. So I used to run down the Boy Scout Bridge. That's Buddy playing in the stream in the background. I used to, you know, when I run in my neighborhood, there's different dogs in the neighborhood, and I call them by name. You know, they'll come out and they'll start barking at you, and you go, hey, Homer, how you doing? What a good dog, good boy. Do all that stuff. Your buddy's looking at me like, you talking to me? You talking to me? And you just talk to them. I mean, even the mean ones, after a while, after two or three trips, they'll come out and start barking. You go, hey, bear, how you doing? Good boy. And they'll stop barking and lay down, because they're like, oh, okay, it's you again. So, I mean, you just got to... to deal with the dogs on their own level. But the water bottles, yeah, squirt them in the face, and then you just point at them like a gun. They won't come near you. Works for Knucklehead here. I'm going to run because I'm getting eaten alive. Woo-hoo, over the old stone wall, up to the old carriage road, down the trail.
Okay, so here's the winner of the Gracie's Bra competition. You ready? Here it comes.
Hey, Chris. My name is Micah. I am, in fact, not a woman, but I'm calling on behalf of my wife. I listened to your show last week. It was very uplifting, if you will. And I'm just calling to see if I could get a sample for her. She's been running for about a year, and she really pretty much refuses to spend any money on herself with running while I buy, you know, my $100 shoes. So I just thought I'd try and do something nice for her instead of for myself for once. So if I win, that'd be great. If not, hopefully someone else will enjoy it. Love the show. Been listening to it for a while, and finally decided it was time to call in. So thanks a lot. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
So that's it. Gracie chose Micah, the guy. He was the only guy to call in, and she said any guy who would do that for his wife deserves a bra. So I'm going to have to call him and make sure he's not a cross-dresser or something. But I don't even know his address. I don't even know his last name, but I do have his phone number. So we'll hunt him down. And we'll hook him up with Gracie. And I said, Gracie, you're going to get me in trouble because hell hath no fury like a bunch of women scorned. So I hope the rest of you go out and try out Gracie's stuff anyhow. Because Joe, who was one of the interviewers with me, she got one and she loves it. And she was a chronic chafer. So give it a run.
So hope there's no wind here. A little bit of a zephyr. Up on top of a hill, pretty tall hill. AT&T owns a telephone company, and they had a big radio tower up here. From the old days, you know, they set up a whole set of towers and lines in the old days, but now they use it for cell phones, right? I ran through here last week, last Friday, with Buddy, and there was a big dead turkey by the side of the road down at the entrance. Doofus, get yourself tangled up. And he didn't even see it. He ran right by it. He's like that. But I got him leashed now because we just ran by it, and of course it's been shredded and spread across 100 feet of ground. This turkey is just a bunch of little bits and pieces of turkey feather. Big, big old tom. You know, maybe a 15 pounder. But I'm sure the coyotes got it, had their way with it. So we're going to leash him up so I don't have to take him to the vet for some strange parasite, some strange coyote brain disease. All right, we're back from our run. Looking at my garden. I got raspberries. Didn't plant those, but they sort of take care of themselves, don't they? Some sort of unnamed squash that my wife brought home. Guess we'll know when it has squash. Got some corn. Just a little bit. Just for show. Got lots and lots of anonymous peppers that she brought home. She's the manager of a greenhouse, and so she brought me all this stuff without labels. So I got some Kentucky Wonders here, climbing up the poles. I got some bush beans, yellow and green. I got another miscellaneous squash. Got some cukes. Oh, something's digging a hole in my cukes. Chipmunks. Nothing in my chipmunk trap, though. I've only caught one. I tell you how to make a chipmunk trap, but I don't want to make the, you know, the chicken-hugging vegans angry at me. Got lots of heirloom tomatoes. Oh, man, these mosquitoes. killing me. Like yellow ones and green ones and stuff. Parsley, lettuce. Got some marigolds, nasturtiums, eggplants. I got a marigold. Those big zinnias. Got some sage. And mint that I planted about 10 years ago. And if you ever plant mint, you better like it. Because you can't kill it. It's worse than poison ivy. Oh, crap, I gotta go, man. I'm getting exsanguinated. That means totally drained of blood. You guys probably know that, though, with the popularity of the Twilight series now.
And we've reached the end of our leash on episode 72, it being in the can. So, I decided to start writing for Cool Running again. I wrote an article on the Maine Marathon last week, and these are sort of promotional articles I do where I describe the race and that sort of thing. So I'm going to keep doing that just because I like the deadlines. And I am going to run a contest somewhere over the next couple of weeks. I'm trying to get the Vibram guys on the phone. I didn't get the Five Fingers things, but I did. They did say they were going to let me give away five pairs of Patagonia Release trail shoes. So start polishing up your best trail story or why you need those shoes, and I'll set it up somehow on the Runner on Live website. I'll set up somehow that you can log in and put your story in there, and we'll have a contest and give away some shoes. And I am going to go epic with Anthony on the mountain bike on Sunday. He says we're going to do 6 hours. So we'll see how that goes. I am an official registered member of the Ragnar Twitter team. So that's going to be crazy. We're an ultra team. I think we're going to each run somewhere 50, 60 miles over the course of 2 days. Should be interesting, considering how I felt today on my run. My diet's non-existent. I'm just hovering in my usual 190 pounds. And the 100 push-ups thing is kind of difficult, too. I keep getting stalled in week two. I'll stay with it. If it's too much work, though, and not fun, I'm going to give up. I usually just do like 20 push-ups before I go running anyhow. So maybe I'll try those push runs that everybody's talking about, where you do the push-ups on the fly. But we'll see how that works. I did get some Hornet juice, and I'm trying out the Hornet juice. I got to tell you, I tried it tonight on my 13-miler, and so far, it's not working for me. You know, I'm a positive guy, but I mixed it with Gatorade, and it ended up tasting like Robitussin cough syrup, so maybe I made it a little strong. And I didn't notice any, and then I couldn't drink it because it was too gross tasting. So I didn't get a lot of it down, but I didn't really notice any pick-me-up from it like I would from a gel or something, so I'm probably doing it wrong. I'm trying to get them on the phone to talk to them. And what else? That's it. This week's going to be another good week. I don't know who I'm going to interview yet, but I got a lot of people lined up. Maybe some more inspirational people. And we're going to take you out with a band called The K's. And the song is called The Mosquito. It's pretty interesting because my nieces are called The K's. So if they're listening to this, how you doing, girls? All right. We'll see you out there.
Well, you've been flying in and out of my life now for the last quarter of a year. You latch onto people's veins until you slap and you splatter blood all over the place.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line, and I will see you out there.
Run, Run, Live, the podcast for all your running needs.